You're now listening to the College Hotline Podcast with your host, John Wilmer.
Welcome to the podcast, everyone. A little pre-draft, pre-NBA draft talk with Scott Howard Cooper, longtime friend who covers the NBA with a focus on the draft for NBA.com, formerly LA Times, Sacramento Bee, guy that dines regularly with Jerry West and Don Nelson. And if there was a roast for you, Coop, I would think, in your honor, I would think it'd be tough to pull the microphone out of Don Nelson's hands or Jerry West's hands. They would have at you.
I would just be concerned on what they would say. That's the problem. Yes. They would talk a long time, but it may be a lot of bad stuff.
Gotcha. Well, I wanted to get Scott on to talk about draft, which is little over a week away, specific focus on some Pac-12 prospects. And let's start at the top. Fultz, Ball, door number three, De'Aaron Fox. Who do you like?
For door number three, right now I still have the 76ers taking Josh Jackson, but De'Aaron Fox would be a possibility. I'm still not completely ruling out De'Aaron Fox to the Lakers at number two. The majority of the people that I speak to around the league are still saying Lonzo Ball. I've had Ball in my mock draft so far. I'm going to have another one that goes up in a day or two, but I'm still going to stick with Ball. I'm just saying it's not the done deal that most people seem to be assuming. So you got Fultz one, Ball two, Josh Jackson three. And then at that point, the Suns at four have Eric Bledsoe at point guard, but De'Aaron Fox is a real possibility for Phoenix and four. Then you've got the Kings with their choice of either the leftover point guard, which they would love De'Aaron Fox to be there, or they go small forward with whether it's between Tatum and Jackson, whichever one of those two do not get picked.
And what do you think the debate is with the Lakers, if there is any? Let's say they're talking it out in their draft room between Ball and Fox. What do you think they're discussing?
The simple pros and cons of each player, I don't think that it has anything to do with family situations, the way a lot of people are assuming. I think it's just a matter that De'Aaron Fox has a chance to be really, really good. And the Lakers realize this. The entire NBA realizes it. Lonzo Ball obviously got the majority, would have gotten more attention out on the West Coast among players in the college game. But there's a lot to like about De'Aaron Fox. When you look at his size combined with that speed, it has the ability to be a game changer. And he's a very sharp guy as well. Both of them are. Let's not confuse Lonzo with LeVar. They're two very different people in personality, so it's not a knock on Lonzo at all. But I'm saying De'Aaron shows up to an interview and speaks with the team, you walk away very impressed. I've spent some time visiting with him. This guy's sharp, really has a lot of maturity, especially for a one-and-done. I think it's the fact that Ball is probably a better true distributor. He's such a great playmaker. He's got that vision. He's got the ability to make the right pass in the right place at the right time. Whereas Fox really just pops. He jumps out at you because of that speed at 6'4". There's all that you hear, the John Wall comparisons all the time, because of the speed, because of the size, and obviously because of the Kentucky background.
I remember talking to Don McLean back in January, basically at the start of the Pac-12 conference season. He said Fultz was the top pick, absolute no-brainer, ready for the NBA game, understanding of pick and roll, all that kind of stuff, athleticism. Do you agree? I mean, is Fultz head and shoulders above that next tier?
I don't think it's an obvious choice, but there is separation. I would say that it would be a surprise if it was not Fultz. And right now it's the Celtics pick. There's a chance that Boston will deal that. I don't think it's an automatic. The Celtics a year ago, a lot of people, when they had number three, people said, well, they're in win now mode. They have to trade it. They obviously did not. Not only did they go with a college player, but they went with a college one and done, Jaylen Brown. So they'll go young again if they feel necessary. They didn't make a trade at the trade deadline in February. and I don't think it's for sure they're going to make one now, but I do think it's for sure that they will look around and see if they could dangle that pick and get a veteran. If the Celtics keep the pick, and I would have to think if most anybody else who moves into that spot, I'm trying to think of a situation that it wouldn't be Markelle Fultz, and it's hard to find. I think that Fultz, there is separation between Markelle and then the rest of the group.
The next Pac-12 player on most mock draft boards is Markkanen from Arizona. I saw Draft Express had him going seventh, I think. You know, you see anywhere in that 7-10 range. Do you think that's about right? And how do you come down on – where do you come down on the Nowitzki comparisons other than the fact that they're, you know, big jump-shooting white Euros?
Yeah.
I mean –
That's the thing. If Lowry was from Tucson or from New York or from Florida, you'd have to wonder if that would completely skew the storyline.
Yeah.
Because obviously the fact that he's a European is what sort of pushes everybody to say, you know, okay, well, that's Dirk. But, yeah, you can see it. I mean, a seven-footer with that kind of range. And from the same general region of the world, you can see why people tend to fall along those lines. But I think that 7-10 is just about right. I've had him at number 10 to the Kings now for a couple weeks, and in my updated mock, I think I'm going to bump him up a little bit. Minnesota makes a lot of sense. Boy, the Timberwolves would sure be intriguing if they have Karl Anthony Towns able to stretch the floor, and you put him next to Lowry Markkanen, able to stretch the floor. When you also have Wiggins and Levine, and maybe they get something more from Chris Dunn next year. Talk about a team that was interesting coming into this past season. If they have two bigs that can both force your defenses out to three-point range, that gets really interesting.
Where do you see Ivan Rapp, which is a fascinating story? Guy comes back. He was talking about leaving with Jaylen Brown last year, decides he wants to come back, you know, commendable for sure. And I don't know, you could argue he's lost himself a bunch of money, 10, 12 spots in the draft. You think, it seems like he's certainly first rounder, but you think somewhere in the 20s?
Late teens, early 20s. Right now I have him at 21. As I said, I'll have a new mock up in a day or two. Somewhere right in that range, maybe move him up a spot or two, drop him a spot or so. But I think that's probably a pretty good read, not only on where he is now, but what his decision to return has cost him. We're probably talking 8 or 10 spots. And that's a tough thing. You know, no kid likes to hear that. And you better believe that anytime things like that happen, that becomes then a cautionary tale that players a year from now or 2 years from now start to hear, and not just for Rab, but friends or family or, shall we say, advisors who are not yet officially agents want to get into a kid's ear. Those are the stories you're going to hear.
And what do you think what is the scouting report right now on him, particularly what are the holes that NBA team saw this year that maybe they didn't realize existed last spring?
I don't know that it's so much that he's that much worse. There's been a leveling off. He has not moved himself forward. I think the biggest problem, and this is what won't get mentioned enough, but the draft is so much deeper this year. There's so many more good players at the top than a year ago. When we talk about Markkanen at 10, for example, a year ago, he's very possibly the exact same player in the exact same situation, could be in the conversation for 6, maybe 7. There's just a lot better guys. The same thing, there's a point guard from France, Frank Ntilikina, that is going to go somewhere around 8, 9, 10, that a year ago would have been in the conversation for 5 or 6. But because there's more talent in the draft this year, and there's more really good point guards, those are the things that push you down. I don't think that Rob has necessarily, he definitely has not helped himself. I don't know that he's hurt himself all that much as the circumstances really turned against him. Probably dropped a few spots but it's not like there's anything dramatic, that there's a lot more dislike for him out there. There's just a ton more talent at the top than there was a year ago.
Right, and certainly something that, you know, who knows if he or his people took into account when he made his decision last spring. How many UCLA players do you think will end up being picked over the course of the two rounds next week?
Well, we know for sure that there's going to be three. Ball, up at the very near the very top. TJ Leaf, I think, has a chance to go at the end of the lottery, maybe a few spots deeper. So somewhere in the mid to late teens, I think, is the worst that he gets. Ike Anagbogu, I think, is in the 20s, and he gets picked, but he definitely gets picked at some point. And then I get to, at that point, we kind of get into semantics on whether you want to consider Jonah Bolden a UCLA guy. He sort of had a flyby, had a redshirt year and then played part of a season before playing this last season in Serbia. So he's got some UCLA in his background, but it's not like people would consider him a UCLA product. But a real interesting name to keep in mind, not just for West Coast people or Pac-12 people that may have seen him a little bit with the Bruins, but I think that that's a name that could jump up a little bit higher on draft night than some people are expecting.
And do you see this as a, I don't know, I look at it and think, boy, they had a lot of talent, the Bruins did last season. Do you view their year as having made the most of what they had?
I would think so. It's a tough read because when we talk about players in the draft and their ability to become really good pros, that's not the same thing as how they were in college, and that works both ways. This happens every year that there's going to be some All-American or somebody maybe even wins a Player of the Year, and they end up getting picked a lot later than maybe their name recognition would indicate, and people. We always get the, how could this happen? This guy was first-team All-American. Clearly, he's a great player. And that obviously is not the same thing. What a player did in college is not the same thing as what a player did in pros, because the NBA front offices are projecting. They're not looking at this last season. They're looking at the next 8 or 10 and projecting where this guy is going. And so then at times it works the other way. And you'd say, well, a guy wasn't very good in college, and or whether the team didn't max out. But UCLA, it's not like they fell on their face. They had a decent run and lost to a quality team, a team that, by the way, was very fired up by the comments of LeVar Ball. I had an interesting conversation with De'Aaron Fox, who said that Ball's comments about Kentucky basically being a warm-up game en route to the national championship really motivated them. and so all those different things come into play. But no, I don't think UCLA had a bad finish that shows that they didn't maximize their talent. They went far, and not as far as they wanted, but they didn't lose in the first round. And when they did lose, it was to a quality opponent. And so, no, I don't think that the NBA people look at it in that way at all.
Gotcha. There are, five or six Pac-12 prospects that are viewed as, you know, maybe late first, more likely second-round pick. You got the Oregon trio. You got Kyle Kuzma from Utah. Kobe Simmons, Arizona. I may even be missing somebody in there. Do you think...
Derek White from Colorado, not quite up at that. I don't think he goes early second round, but I think mid-second round is a possibility. And then if you want to talk about other West Coast guys, not necessarily Pac-12 guys, but you're going to be hearing Gonzaga in the lottery.
Yep.
Zach Collins. I think you'll be hearing Gonzaga late in the second round. Maybe he moves up a little bit. Nigel Williams-Goss.
Yep.
Cameron Oliver from Nevada, I think, is a chance late second round. So there's going to be a pretty good West Coast or Western representation between the Pac-12 and some of the other schools on the West who aren't in the Pac-12.
Do you think NBA scouts are when they look at Collins, they're looking at Collins and they're projecting what he's got, you know, another 15, 20 pounds of muscle. And what are they seeing at that point? Another Olenek or something else?
Yeah, you have to project where the guy is going to be. And in most cases, especially a guy like Zach is a one and done, as opposed to maybe somebody coming out after their junior season, or maybe somebody who's elderly and coming out as a senior, having run out of eligibility, those old guys.
Yes.
They are trying to say, where is he going to be in a couple of years physically? And there are a couple times you say, well, they just don't have the body type that's going to add much weight. And you know what? Some guys just turn out to be pretty thin their whole lives.
Yeah.
But in most cases, they're thinking, because somebody has just finished their freshman year, that's a time when everybody, you know, a lot of people are still growing, not just athletes, but people grow in what would be their sophomore and junior years of college. You get them in an NBA weight program and the nutrition system. And that's not to say that some of the big schools like Gonzaga don't have quality programs in that regard. But these guys at that point don't have to worry about classes and homework and what it's like on a travel day. Because in the NBA, on a travel day, as long as you don't get in at some crazy time, you can go work out. And you're working out before practice, after practice, maybe before games. If you're not in the rotation and playing a lot, they're going to say, you know, get in a good run before the game. So guys are going to improve. And if you look at a guy like Zach, who's already, 230, 225 pounds, if you're thinking you add some good muscle to that, and with that kind of shooting range and some of the moves, some of the work he did around the basket, that's why he's in the lottery, not because of necessarily what he did in the national semifinals or any one specific stretch in Gonzaga, because this was a guy that a lot of people liked going into the year. Even before he began his college career, people knew about him. But it's that you look at that and then say, okay, now he's bigger and stronger, and he's got a lot more experience, and he's playing sometimes, even if it's in the D League, even if he isn't getting a lot of NBA burn right away. Experience plus muscle plus the NBA teaching, people see a guy that can stretch the floor and really hurt you on offense.
Of the Oregon trio, Dorsey, Bell, Brooks, who do you think is going to be in the best pro?
I like Bell, and I think that seems to be the consensus, because defensively, he has the best chance to make an impact somewhere, and for him, that's going to come on defense. I give the other two guys a chance, but I just think I think they're going to be picked later on, if at all. I think that Brooks gets picked. I'm not as convinced about Dorsey, but I think you could see both those guys taken in from the late 40s all the way down to 60 at the very end. So they're in that mix there.
Thank you very much for joining me. I appreciate it.